welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here on Thursday. It's October 4th, 2018. So earlier this week, we talked about some teams who were disappointing on the Monday show. So I figured maybe on Thursday, we should go in a different direction, talk about some of the teams who are impressive, perhaps in a surprising way, after 4 weeks of the season. We're going to get to one of those teams, Cincinnati Bengals, a little later on. But first, we are having a first-time guest here on the show to talk about, I would say, the consensus best team in football, the 4-0 Los Angeles Rams. And joining me to discuss them is Lindsay Theory of ESPN. Lindsay, how are you?
Good. How are you today, Bill?
I am good. I am not as good, perhaps, as Jared Goff was this time last week, because Jared Goff had maybe one of, I would, certainly the best game of his career, I would imagine, and one of the best games in recent history. It was just an otherworldly performance. Just every single drive, I felt like he was going to throw for a touchdown. And he was phenomenal. And I mean, granted, he played well last year. He really hit a, you know, had a breakout season last year that a lot of people weren't anticipating. But do you get a sense that he's hit a new level after these first four games of 2018 versus the person we saw in 2017? Or do you think this is just kind of like a natural progression and he just is basically where he was a year ago, maybe with some slightly better results here and there?
I think it's a progression, but I think it's an absolutely better version of Jared Goff. Mm-hmm. Some of these throws that he made, especially on Thursday night, I mean, in the press box, we're not supposed to make reactions, but there was a lot of gasps and audible awes as Jared let a few of those balls fly. And it's just because it's not the Jared Goff that we saw a season ago. Mm-hmm. And we saw glimpses during training camp of this Jared Goff. He was really just taking chances, getting balls into tight windows, making decisions that maybe a year ago he would have checked down or checked out of. Mm-hmm. And this season, he is really trusting his receivers. I think he has a really good understanding of what Sean McVay wants to accomplish. And Jared's just taken his game to a next level. It could be a natural progression, but it is a pretty big jump from 2017.
I mean, do you think they're doing anything differently in the preparation process when it comes to how Sean McVay and Jared Goff are preparing for games? Is it something where you think they just maybe have a little more trust in one another, or maybe have they learned something from maybe some of the downsides from an excellent season in 2017?
Yeah, I don't think that they've really changed. I mean, consistency is one of the key buzzwords that goes on around the Rams practice facility, especially between Sean and Jared. So I think it's really just Jared growing as a quarterback, being more mature, understanding what Sean's system is. And I don't want to get into the system quarterback thing, but but Jared understands what Sean McVay's playbook calls for. And I think that Sean McVay has been able to open his playbook more just because of Jared's understanding of it. And he's obviously got an ability to complete these throws and to make some of these decisions. So I think it's really just an understanding between the two and a trust in Jared and his ability.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the system quarterback thing. We don't have to get too far into it, but let me just ask you this. We saw some of his teammates come out this week and sort of jokingly say, hey, yeah, that's a system quarterback. We're very happy with the system we have and the system quarterback we have. I mean, do you think that's something that bothers McVay and Goff directly, or is it more just the perception around the team that sort of rankles maybe some of the people in that locker room?
Yeah, you know what? I asked Sean McVay about Jared and whether he was kind of a product of his system or if it was just Jared being a great quarterback. And Sean did get a little defensive. He almost like went into protective dad mode, which is not something you usually see from Sean McVay. His answers are usually, you know, I don't want to say rehearsed, but they're very routine. And this one kind of went off the rails a little bit for Sean. So I do think it got to him because I don't think he wants Jared to be sold short on his talent and his ability, which I think enables Sean to play make some of the play calls that he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly seems like it's a mutually beneficial thing. Like, it's crazy to think that there's any quarterback who's succeeding in spite of his system. Obviously, it's going to be a little bit of both at all times. In terms of their performance through 4 weeks, I mean, it's not crazy to believe that the Rams are 4-0. They were one of the favorites to compete for a Super Bowl before the season, but I think maybe you look at how they've performed, you know, a little unsteady in the first half against the Raiders, but since then really dominant over the next next 3.5 games. So they're 4-0, quite comfortably the favorites in the NFC West, especially with Earl Thomas and Jimmy Garoppolo done for the season. And the Football Power Index at ESPN gives the Rams a 2.0% chance of finishing the year at 16-0. Now, it's very early, obviously, in the campaign, but, I mean, is there any sort of conversation you're hearing in that locker room about the idea of going 16-0? Was that a goal the Rams have, or is it almost like that's too far in the horizon for the team to really worry about?
I really think it's something that's too far in the horizon. Mm-hmm. You know the common refrain, it's one day at a time, one game at a time, and they really stay on point when it comes to kind of those talking points. Now, I have heard a little conversation bubble up that they really think they can dominate maybe in the NFC West, mm-hmm. You know, just by looking around and, like you mentioned, seeing what happened in San Francisco, seeing as they shut out the Cardinals already and now they're onto a rookie quarterback. And now going into Seattle with the Seahawks team that is struggling to protect Russell Wilson a bit. Mm-hmm. So there has been a little bit of conversation on that tone, but 16-0, I don't think these guys are getting ahead of themselves in the fact that they know they really still have a tough schedule coming up. You know, they have to face Aaron Rodgers. They're going to get Drew Brees. They're going to get the Eagles down the road. And then they also have to go to Mexico City to face Patrick Mahomes. So I think these guys know there's plenty of challenge and they haven't really let themselves think that 16-0 is a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, certainly a lot of tough matchups still to come. And you mentioned all those quarterbacks they're going to face, and there are some injury issues in the secondary. But in general, is there a weak spot? You know, if you look at the Rams roster, if you look at how they've played through 4 weeks, is there a spot you think either the Rams internally are concerned about as sort of the weak point of their team that maybe, you know, some teams around the league might be able to exploit as the season goes on?
Yeah, if there's a position group that is still kind of in flux, it's got to be an outside linebacker, which, you know, in Wade Phillips' scheme, that edge rusher is always an important guy, and obviously they kind of make up for it for their down linemen. But Dominique Easley is a guy who they really wanted to make that transition to outside linebacker, and he did. Of course, Dominique has suffered several serious knee injuries, and he just had another setback, and he's been placed on IR. And they really thought he was going to be a strong solution at outside linebacker. So now they're going to go on to Matt Longacre, who is a guy who's played well in spot opportunities, but also has had a problem staying healthy. And behind Matt, it's just a rookie Trayvon Young, who I don't really think they expected much from this season outside maybe some special teams contributions. So that's an area to exploit. However, Wade Phillips, as crafty as he is, has been moving some linemen around and been presenting some different looks. So even that perhaps being a weakness, I'm not sure that it's going to be something that other teams can necessarily exploit.
Yeah, I mean, Ndamukong Suh has had, I believe, one at least one of his sacks came as basically a defensive end a couple weeks ago. And then Matt Longacre did a 5.5 sacks a year ago, did get a bunch of pressure. But it does seem like a concern. I mean, do you think it's a situation where the Rams could look to add a veteran, either via trade or some of the guys who are left in free agency? Or do you think they're kind of just set with the players they have on this roster right now?
You know, I get the sense that they're really just set with the roster that they have now. And if it becomes an issue, maybe they'll kind of explore outside options. But I know they really like Matt Longacre. It's just a matter of, look, as you mentioned, he had 5.5 sacks last year. He seems to make it happen. Mm-hmm. But there is some concern just about his ability to stay healthy.
Yeah, hardly out of the question. And, of course, we know there are injury concerns now in the secondary. Aqib Talib is on IR. Marcus Peters did appear to suffer what looked like a serious injury at first, but then was able to come back and play last week. So fortunately, he seemed to escape a serious injury there. I mean, they were able to turn to Sam Shields at cornerback, who was out of football for, I believe, almost 2 years, didn't play any defensive snaps in week one, slowly sort of working his way back into the rotation. What do you think about Shields' sort of performance so far, and do you think that he can be a suitable replacement for Talib in that cornerback rotation?
Yeah, what an incredible story, right, on Sam Shields making his comeback to football after he was out for nearly two seasons. Sam obviously stepped in for Aqib Talib, and he was close on several plays. But as you know, in a game of inches, close isn't good enough. And, you know, Sean McVay said that they know Sam Shields can perform better. And I think Sam was for him, it was the next step and really his comeback. So maybe there's also a little mental barrier there.
Sure.
For Sam, but he also acknowledged that he could play better. But there's one play in particular, you know, ball Sam nearly intercepts. It ends up skipping off his fingertips and right into the hands of, I believe it was Adam Thielen.
Yes.
And they get like a 24-yard pickup there for the Vikings. So there's several plays like that for Sam that were really close, but instead went for big gains for the Vikings. So I think they're expecting more out of him this week. I think he's a suitable backup, but I think that the Rams really look forward to the day when they get to Aqib Talib and take him off the IR.
All right, we'll be back with Lindsay Theory to talk about more of the Los Angeles Rams in a moment. But first, I want to talk about our partners at Hotel Tonight, because no matter where you're going, like I'm going to Los Angeles in November, I may be interested in checking out a Rams game if the time works out, but if it does, if it doesn't, I will be there anyway. And the place I went to go book a hotel was on Hotel Tonight, because in the past, I've used Hotel Tonight to book last-minute stays for myself or friends or family when I was living in Vegas, for example. Now, I live in New York. I have people come visit New York. I use Hotel Tonight. But in Los Angeles, I was able to book a stay months in advance because Hotel Tonight is not just about stays for tonight anymore. Granted, I understand the name, but if you are so inclined, if you are interested, if you need a hotel for a business trip, if you need a hotel for a trip with your family coming up in advance, all you have to do is go to the Hotel Tonight app, go to HotelTonight.com, and you can book a stay for up to 100 days in advance for most cities. No matter where you're going around the planet Earth, don't think they sell stays on other planets, but it might be worth downloading the app to check out, and just so you can tell me I'm wrong on social media, the most fun activity I can possibly imagine for anybody outside of booking a hotel rate for a cheap deal. So again, go to HotelTonight.com, download the Hotel Tonight app. I use it, highly recommend it, would suggest you give it a shot as well. HotelTonight.com. Now back to the show. On the flip side, is there someone on this team right now who's playing really well that maybe isn't getting sort of the national attention that, you know, your Goffs and your Gurleys and your Cooper Cups are getting right now?
Yeah, I'd say look to the defense, and John Johnson, their strong safety, he's had an outstanding start to the season. He's in the middle of every play. And I know he's a guy that internally the Rams really speak highly of. And then the other one would be linebacker Corey Middleton. Now, he took over for Alec Ogletree after they traded Alec to the New York Giants. And Corey is a very quiet guy by nature, but he's in there making the defensive play calls. He's leading the team in tackles, which is, you know, not too surprising for the inside linebacker position. But he has really stepped up in a big way, and I know that the more comfortable he gets, the better this defense seems to flow. And so I think he's kind of an unheralded guy, former undrafted free agent who's found his way into a starting role for one of the best defenses in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, Wade Phillips really has that reputation of taking guys and, you know, who are maybe unheralded in a lot of ways and turning them into useful players. Did that with a bunch of inside linebackers during his time in Denver. Now Corey Littleton, playing linebacker for the Rams, is an undrafted free agent. John Johnson, third-round pick last year, who moved into the starting lineup in midseason and seemed to really help out next to LaMarcus Joyner. So, yeah, I mean, those guys are both, you know, part of a defense that is playing at a really high level. And then on the flip side, we know the offense is going to be good. So, I mean, this is a team that really the most complete team in football, it seems like, right now.
Yeah, you know, and the offense, it's funny because none of those guys really are unheralded anymore. When you have three receivers who each have more than 100 receiving yards, we all know Todd Gurley, the offensive line, they're all pretty well-known established linemen. And so nobody on the offense really should be too surprising. If there's one guy I'm kind of curious to monitor, it'd be Gerald Everett. He's tight end, great pass-catching ability, really able to pick up a lot of yards after the catch. But he was slow during the preseason because of a shoulder injury, and so a little bit slower to work into the offense. But I'll be really interested to see Sean McVay going forward, how much he starts to utilize Everett at the tight end position, not just as a blocker, but really as a pass catcher.
Yeah, I mean, this is an offense where you look at the snap counts each week, and it's different from anywhere else in football, and it really fascinates me because you have basically 10 guys who play, when they're healthy, almost every single snap. I think there are 10 guys who played 95% of the snaps on offense or more. So it's the five linemen, it's Jared Goff, Todd Gurley, the three receivers, and then it's basically, this week it was, I think, almost 60-40 maybe, if I'm not mistaken, between Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett. So it's incredible to think that when you have so many offenses around the league who want to rotate guys in and out, keep guys fresh, they want to try and create mismatches on individual plays, you have the Rams and Sean McVay who are just like, yeah, we're just going to run the same 10 guys out there, same formation, you know, same three wide receiver set, and we're just going to beat you with those guys every single play.
Yeah, you know, Sean lives and dies by 11 personnel, and right now he's making a really, really good living off it. Once in a while, I know there was one player they put three tight ends in on Robert Woods' touchdown, but really he sticks with his three receivers. He sticks with Todd Gurley, and they are just able to present so many different looks that Sean's made it work, and they get the matchups they want. That touchdown pass to Cooper Kupp, that long one comes to mind when they got Kupp lined up with Anthony Barr, and Sean, that's where he's so good. He's just able to see what the defense is doing. He puts them in a formation where he knows he's going to get those mismatches, and Jared's obviously executing to make sure that's where the ball goes.
Yeah. You mentioned matchups, and leads to a question of mine. Is there an opponent you think down the line, not really during the regular season, but during the postseason? They might play them during the regular season, I guess, of course. But as we get into sort of thinking about their postseason opportunities and their postseason matchups, is there a team you think really matches up well against the Rams, or a team that you might think would give them trouble? And that the Rams, you know, obviously they think they can beat anybody, but who they might want to avoid come January?
You know, I don't think there's any team out there right now that the Rams would want to avoid. I think they're just such a confident group of guys in their ability on offense and defense. You know, as far as postseason, you know, it's so hard to predict who they might run into at this point. But I know that, you know, they look forward to the matchup against Kansas City. I know they look forward to facing Drew Brees. And I know this defense, with as many great quarterbacks as they're going to encounter through the rest of the season. You talk to Ndamukong Suh every week, and the guy's like almost salivating over the thought of who we might get to sack. Even going down to the playoffs, I don't think the Rams are afraid of anybody. And I think even, you know, the biggest, the best teams in the NFL, the most reputable teams, I think the Rams really just want a piece of them to really set in motion the fact that they are a good team that's, you know, well on their way for the next several years.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that, given how they've played over the first 4 weeks, they shouldn't really fear anybody. They've been playing at a really high level, so it does make sense that they would be quite comfortable playing anybody. However, and I'll finish up with this, think about last season. The Rams were, you know, very good. They were not, they didn't start 4-0, I don't believe. They were, yeah, started 3-1, but finished the year, they were 11-4 after beating Tennessee. They had a meaningless game in week 17 against San Francisco, and they sat their stars. I mean, Jared Goff didn't play. Todd Gurley, who, you know, had a outside chance at winning MVP, he didn't play. A lot of their stars either played limited snaps or played no snaps at all. And then they come out in the wild card round next week, and they didn't play well. I mean, they lost the Falcons 26-13. The Falcons are a good team, but it certainly seemed like a sloppy performance from a team that had not been sloppy during the month of December really at all. So do you think, given that they are so far ahead in the NFC West and are huge favorites to win the division, certainly favorites to finish with the top seed in the NFC, and there's a reasonable chance, you know, they're not going to have a lot to play for in week 16 or week 17. Do you think they would look at the situation at the end of the year differently this year than they did a year ago? Or are they just going to try and keep their guys healthy heading into the postseason, even if it means resting guys for a game or two?
Well, I don't think Sean McVay is against doing anything that's outside the ordinary. I mean, he didn't play any of his starters during the preseason. I think a lot of that perhaps had to do with the fact that he had already made the decision in week 3 to rest a couple of his linemen, and then another lineman got hurt, and he wasn't going to put Jared Goff out there behind a bunch of rookies. But with the start that they've had to the season, I think it just kind of reinforces Sean's thought on he's going to stick to doing things how he wants. And his number one thing really seems to be to keep his team healthy. And the Rams were one of the healthiest teams in the NFL last season. So far, they're on their way this year, minus a couple of key injuries. But I wouldn't be surprised if Sean McVay in week 17 says we're resting our starters. I mean, he does it every week with his veteran guys, Andrew Whitworth, and Ndamukong Suh. Those guys, they don't practice on Wednesdays because Sean's so intent on making sure everyone's fresh and ready to go. So I could definitely see him carrying that mantra into week 17. I don't know if he'd sit them for 16 and 17, But I think he'd want to make sure he goes into that playoff game and goes into that playoff run potentially as healthy as possible.
That's the thing I was going to say is that, is Sean McVay prepared for the onslaught of protests if he sits his players during what would be the fantasy football championship game in week 16 against Arizona?
Oh, I don't know. Sean would probably have to go get a few lessons from Todd Gurley on how to deal with the fantasy crowd. That would really be something. I didn't even think of that, Bill, but I will keep that in mind as the season goes on because that's something definitely to monitor.
We should definitely keep Sean McVay abreast of fantasy football players' concerns, given that his offense seems to be propelling just about every fantasy team who has more than one Ram to victories so far this year. Lindsay, of course, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Where can people check out more of your stuff?
Check it out at ESPN.com/NFL and then hit the Rams tab.
Yeah, and are you on social media as well?
Yep, at Lindsay Theory. Pretty awesome. Pretty simple. And on Instagram, trying to keep up with the kids these days.
Are you Lindsay with an A or an E?
Lindsay with an E.
Do you have a strong... I always ask, if we have Lindsay Jones from The Athletic on the show a lot, and I have to ask, do you have a strong opinion on Lindsay's with A's as opposed to Lindsay's with E's?
You know what's funny? Growing up as a Lindsay, all of my best friends, their names are also Lindsay. I don't know what happened around, you know, sometime there in the mid-1980s, but we all ended up named Lindsay. So half of us are E's, half of us are A's. So I'm okay either way, but I prefer the E's a little bit more.
Understandably. Well, thank you so much. We're going to come back here on the show after the break with Catherine Terrell and more coming on the Bill Barnwell Show. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm still Bill Barnwell of ESPN. It's still October 4th. We are joined by a new guest, though. It is someone we had on the Nickel Package, I believe, last year. I don't know if she's been on the show, on my show itself. So I'll call it a first-time guest, but someone who I'm familiar with does great work covering the Bengals at ESPN. It's ESPN's Catherine Terrell. Catherine, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm good. And I am excited to talk about the 3-1 Cincinnati Bengals, who talked about them a tiny bit on Monday with Mina Kimes and wanted to save it because we wanted to have a discussion with you about them because I know, personally, I was not someone who expected the Bengals to start 3-1 to beat the Ravens and beat the Falcons. So, I mean, is there something where that was that something you expected before the year? And do you think, not only from your perspective, but from the team's perspective, did they expect to be in first place 1 month into the season?
So when I did my preseason predictions, after the draft, maybe it was a while ago, I had them at 8-8 initially, and I had them at 2-2 to start the season, losing both games against the Falcons and the Panthers. Mm-hmm. But as the season started and I saw how they played, I actually did get the 3-1 prediction right, just like game by game wise. Mm-hmm. Not to brag or anything, you know. But now I think that this team has a killer instinct is what I've been calling it. You saw that against the Colts when they had that late game fumble, against the Ravens when they forced another fumble late, and then against the Falcons for that game winning drive. You know, I don't know that anyone would have expected them to be in first place, though. I thought the Steelers were going to be better than they are. Mm-hmm. I thought that the Steelers wouldn't be as good as last year, but I still thought they'd be good enough to, you know, kind of get along like they always have. So it's definitely unexpected for a lot of people, but this team has so much confidence right now. I definitely think that they think that the sky's the limit for them.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the Steelers, so let's just get to that part of the conversation already because you know it's going to come up in talking about the Bengals. So they're currently 3-1. They're in first place in the AFC North. They are at home this week against the 3-1 Dolphins, who I think it's fair to say people are a little skeptical of their record, even after losing to the Patriots by a bunch of points last week. And the Bengals are, if I'm not mistaken, as it'll appear, 6-point favorites at home against Miami. So if things go as planned, they're going to be 4-1. They will have a home game against the Pittsburgh Steelers in week 6. Now, for Bengals fans, I'm not going to recite their record against the Steelers in recent years. It has not gone especially well. We know what happened last year on Monday Night Football. It did not go well for them. They blew a huge lead to Pittsburgh in the game that's maybe most remembered for Ryan Shazier suffering a serious injury. But in terms of the Steelers, we know the fans, you know, probably have a hang up about the Steelers and about how important it is for Cincinnati to, you know, sort of launch themselves by beating Pittsburgh. Is there the same sort of feeling amongst the coaches and the players, or is it just sort of another game to them when they think about the Steelers?
I can definitely tell you that when it comes to Steelers week, it is never just another game. When you walk into the building that week, you can just, there's just this tension in the air that you can feel it. And maybe it's because of the record that you didn't mention, but I think that they do not treat it as another game. And maybe that's their downfall. Maybe this year will be different. But in the past, the records have never mattered. You saw what happened on Monday Night Football. I mean, they've blown a 17-point lead. And that game was crazy because, you know, Le'Veon Bell comes down the sideline. And they just don't tackle him. And just all this stuff happened. And it just doesn't seem to matter. I mean, of course, I could go back to the playoff game. But I could point out any other game in the last 2 years. So until for the Bengals to be taken seriously, they have to beat the Steelers. This 3-1 record or 4-1 if they win this week doesn't matter. They have to beat the Steelers, and they have to get over this mental block they have with them because they haven't beaten them since 2015, and it's an issue. And I think that this is the year they can do it, but mentally they have to get past that.
Do you think they're not going to necessarily believe in themselves to the extent they need to win this division again until they beat the Steelers?
Maybe some of the coaches, but I don't think the players believe that. I don't get the sense they think that way. And maybe part of it is because there are a lot of really young players on this team that haven't gone through all this drama with the Steelers the last few years. So they don't have that hanging over their heads. You know, I mean, they have maybe the two losses last year, but players like Joe Mixon and John Ross and Carl Lawson and all of those young guys, they don't have that in front of them. So no, I don't believe the players think that way. I think it comes more from the coaching staff.
What about you? I mean, is that the point for you where you feel like, you know, even though of course you are covering them, you think they're going to be a pretty good team. Is that the point where you would start believing, oh, they're the favorites to win this division if they beat the Steelers in week six?
Yes, definitely. Because I think this team is very talented. I think they have what it takes to finish out games, which is their problem before. But like I said, it doesn't matter until they prove they're going to beat this team. That's kind of the hurdle standing in their way. I mean, when they were great in 15, the Steelers were still that hurdle standing in their way. And I just don't think they're going to get that respect until they beat them and say, hey, we're at the top of this division for a reason. You know, we're supposed to be here. And if they can do that, I think it's just a whole new outlook on the season. But until then, you know, it's just kind of a question. So, you know, I guess we'll find out pretty soon. I always look forward to Steelers week. It's always a fun, interesting week.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as we talk about this, like, you know, do you think the team is maybe looking forward to that Steelers game a little too early? Could this be a situation where I don't know that I believe in trap games, but could this be a situation where we're sitting here on Monday and like, oh, you know, the Bengals were looking forward to Steelers week, and so they didn't take the Dolphins as seriously as they should, and the Dolphins were able to pull out a victory in Cincinnati?
I mean, I've considered that, but I'm still picking them to beat the Dolphins by a sizable amount. But it is interesting, a couple of players that we've talked to that have been injured, like Billy Price and Joe Mixon, it was always, I'll be back for Steelers week. And Price actually told a reporter that last week, and it turned out to be wrong because the doctors told him he had to be in a walking boot longer. But, you know, it was interesting. He said, I'm going to be back for Steelers week. And then a few days earlier, Joe Mixon said, you know, I'm waiting until they clear me, but I will be back for Steelers week. And so, you know, they didn't say next week. They said Steelers week. So it's clear some of them are thinking ahead to that game a little bit. But I don't think it's going to take a toll in this game, but you really never know. Last week could have taken a lot out of them. They had to work very, very hard to win that game, and they were exhausted. And we'll just see. I could see them having a letdown. If there was a trap game, it would be this one, but I still think that they'll win.
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly favored. And you figure that's built into the line. The Dolphins were, you know, blown out in New England this week, so they have a lot to prove after, you know, kind of not delivering the performance they were hoping for against New England, and what's really their sort of version of maybe the Steelers game, or the Steelers-Bengals game to some extent as well. You mentioned the guys who were injured, Billy Price, Joe Mixon. They've lost A.J. Green for a chunk of the game in week three. They've had a lot of injuries, and of course Tyler Eifert last week as well. They've had injuries on this offense, but haven't really skipped a beat. What do you credit that to? I mean, this is a team that, you know, had issues last year and the offense was really struggling. What do you think has changed to sort of give the offense that ability to overcome players getting hurt?
I think it's a couple of things. I think, first of all, Andy Dalton is playing as well as he has in years. And he really is playing great. And that drive at the end of the Falcons game, he was basically perfect. I think with the Bengals, sometimes people hold their breath and think, oh, they're driving down to win and he's going to throw a pick or they're going to fumble or something. And he was basically almost perfect. And I think that's a testament to his relationship with Bill Lazor. But I also think that this wide receiver group has grown up a little bit. I think they're finally seeing getting out of Tyler Boyd, what they saw in him when they drafted him. I think John Ross has his ups and downs, but he's going to keep growing. And I think there's just a lot of talent there. Offensive line is still an issue, but it just seems like Dalton has overcome that. And also, the tight ends have grown, too. I think they find their second and third tight end more reliable and playing better than maybe they were playing last year. So that's two other weapons for them. So they have a lot going for them, I think.
Do you chalk up a lot of this to Bill Lazor, or is it just, you know, young players developing, or what do you think, you know, are sort of the bigger, you know, sort of motivating factor, the biggest driving factor across those different positional groups?
I think Lazor has to be given credit. I don't have the stats off the top of my head, and I wish I did, but Andy Dalton's numbers once Lazor took over as offensive coordinator in week three last year are basically through the roof. They're very, very good numbers. And when you look at how that team played just in week three against the Packers right after they fired Ken Zampezi versus how they were playing week one and week two, it's just an astounding difference. I think that Lazor has been more creative with what he does. I think he uses more personnel groups. I think he and Andy have just found a way to connect. And this team just wasn't getting that under Ken Zampezi. And they talk about that sometimes. They say it was a different vibe in the locker room. We couldn't score. Things were so different. And it's true. When I walked into that locker room week two after they lost to the Texans and they scored something like, what, 6 points, 9 points, it was just, there's this tension there, kind of like this mutiny was about to happen. And that's when A.J. Green was talking about how they should have tried to get him the ball at the end of the game, and then Zampezi got fired. When I walk in the locker room now, and of course they're a winning team, so that's what happens, but
sure. They're
just all really happy, and different position groups will be talking to other position groups, which you don't always see in locker rooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll see like an offensive lineman like going and sitting with some of the defensive players and things like that. So I think it's Lazor, and this team is just gelled really well. For whatever reason, they just seem to really enjoy being around each other.
Yeah, and there's real value to that. You know, we can't quantify it, we can't put it into numbers, but it does definitely matter in terms of, you know, building a football team's success. And only other thing I can think of is just maybe people who weren't watching the Bengals last year sort of, they know the offensive line was not great last year, but it was really one of the three or four worst lines in all of football last season. And it does seem like, even with Price injured, it's a better line after adding Cordy Glenn and upgrading, you know, and basically getting Cedric Ogbuehi out of the lineup.
Yeah, it was really bad. And I think people just kind of would look at the stats and not realize quite why things were so bad and why Dalton wasn't playing well and things like that. But he was never given any time. And this line now does have its problems. But there were a lot of times in the Falcons game where he did get time to throw. And you could say this about almost any quarterback, but when he has time, he can be a very good quarterback. And I think Cordy Glenn has really been pretty good. Boy, he was bad enough that he's inactive every week now. I mean, that says a lot. And I think their right side still has issues at right tackle and right guard, but it's still better than it was. So a lot of teams just need an okay line. And if they're just okay, then I think the team is going to be okay. But, yeah, last year, it's just, you name the problem, the team had it. I mean, it was bad enough to make A.J. Green, who's the most mild-mannered player I've been around, fight with Jalen Ramsey. I mean, that was the frustration on this team. And I don't think you'll see much fighting from him this year.
I hope not. That was a scary moment. I feel like I was not prepared for
crazy.
That. All right, guys, we'll be back with more of Catherine Torella and the Cincinnati Bengals discussion in a second. But first, want to mention Indochino, new sponsor of the Bill Barnwell Show. And I'm mentioning it because, well, I'm on TV now a little bit. It's very exciting. I'm very bad at television. But when I first started doing TV a couple years ago, I was really nervous about going on because I had some pretty mediocre suits. I had the one suit you wear to the wedding you go to once a year or your random formal event. But I didn't have suits that I felt like were ready for HD, put it that way. I was not ready for HD myself, but I figured if I'm not ready for HD, it might as well look good. So I've been struggling with it for a bit until I was informed for show reasons that I was going to be working with Indochino. So went on their site. I was able to purchase a custom suit that fits me and my size. And it's so much better than just buying a suit off the rack. Yeah, sure, you can get those suits adjusted, but it's not custom made for you. And it's not the exact suit you want. You're just picking whatever's available on the rack at some store. Not the same thing. Go to Indochino. You can check out their fabrics and colors, all kinds of different options. You can customize your lapel, your lining, your pockets, your buttons. You can even write your own monogram. Do you want your initials? Pretty smart move. Do you want someone else's initials? Weird, but they're willing to accommodate you if that's what you want. All you have to do is you visit a stylist at their showroom or you just measure yourself at home and then you go to Indochino.com and shop for the suits that they have available. Then again, you can customize one to your exact specifications. They will professionally tailor it and then they'll mail it to you in a couple of weeks. And this week, if you are interested in purchasing any premium Indochino suit, you can get it for just $359. That's a great deal for a fantastic custom suit. Go to Indochino.com and enter in promo code Barnwell at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Shipping is free. Indochino.com, promo code Barnwell for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. So you can get that. Indochino is expanding into casual clothing. You'll get made-to-measure chinos, which will be your absolute day-to-day go-to pant. Works with a sweater, works with a suit jacket, works with anything you're going to wear out of your house. You could also wear them in the house. I'm sure they're very comfortable as well. They'll be good any time of year for any occasion, from everything from boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches. You can get those Indochinos at an introductory price of $79 US. So again, whether it's the Indochinos at $79, whether it's the premium Indochino suit at 50% off or $359, go to Indochino.com and enter in promo code Barnwell for any premium suit for $359 and free shipping today. Now back to the show. Kyler Boyd has broken out, and like, I think everyone's sort of paying attention. He's just getting the ball so frequently and playing at a high level. So we know Tyler Boyd has improved dramatically and is playing a bigger role on this team. But is there someone who's not getting that sort of national attention who you think deserves more of it? I mean, is there a player who you think is really standing out that is sort of flying underneath the radar in Cincinnati?
Maybe a couple. I think, first of all, I think Jesse Bates is playing really well. I think a lot of people were shocked when they cut George Iloka, but I think Bates has come in and not missed a beat. I think there, actually you would not think he's underrated because you had him on your team, but I think, Clayton Bedlam did a great job coming in for Sean Williams. He was the one that forced that fumble, and mostly he plays special teams, but that's important. And he really is a very good player that most people just don't know. And also Sam Hubbard has done a very good job with the limited snaps he's been given. He's a guy that's always around the ball. And I love when they randomly bring him in on offense as a fullback, this huge defensive end that's blocking for a running back. It's, I don't know why I find it hilarious, but he almost had a fumble recovery against the Panthers that could have changed a lot of things, and the ball kind of squirted out of his hands. But you can just tell he's a rookie that's going to be really good. And that's kind of what they do with his defensive line. They rotate a lot. And they said after week one, Sam Hubbard has to play more. So they've been trying to get him more snaps, and he played like half the snaps last week. So they've definitely kind of been doing that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, actually, because you figure heading into the year, if you ask most people, well, who's going to be the breakout player on the Bengals this year, it would have been Carl Lawson, who was really productive last year. You might argue he already broke out as a rookie a year ago when he had, I believe, 8.5 sacks. I mean, he was playing at a high level, but he was really a reserve. And so you figure, well, they cut Michael Johnson before the year. They brought him back, but you figure it would have been to carve out a starting role and more regular snaps for Carl Lawson, sort of being the number two guy in that rotation behind Carlos Dunlap. But it hasn't really been the case this year. He's played about 48% of the defensive snaps, and he's still productive, but it did seem like he was going to kind of have a bigger role. Are you surprised to see them not giving him more snaps? Do you think that's going to change, or do you think that's really sort of their philosophy, is we're only going to have him play about half the snaps in a game from week to week?
No, it's actually their philosophy, and Marvin Lewis explained it a few months ago at the beginning of the season. He said they want to limit his snaps so that at the end of the game, he'll still be fresh and can make those big plays that you see from him. He actually had two big plays against the Falcons. One was that sack that ended up, he hit Ryan in the head and the sack got taken away, which Lawson was not happy about, by the way. He hates it more than anyone else when his sacks get taken away. It's really funny. Just because he's so passionate about it. And then he came back with a sack. Trying to remember at what point it was in the fourth quarter, but, you know, it was a few minutes later, and he kind of made up for it. So that's what they want to see. They want him to be fresh at the end of the game. He's had some injury history, and I don't know if that goes into it, but actually, as we were talking, the injury report just came out, and he's on it today. So that's interesting. But, no, I wouldn't expect his snaps to really go up because they still want to play Jordan Willis, who plays more in base versus Lawson, who comes in with the nickel package and on third down. And they want to play Sam Hubbard. I mean, honestly, if anyone should get reduced playing time, it's probably Michael Johnson. And he did get a little reduced playing time when he came back last week after his injury, but he still plays a lot. But I think these young guys really need to play as much as possible.
Yeah, they're playing at a high level. That sack came in the red zone with 4:35 left. So it was, they were up, the Falcons were up 2 points, and it was second and 12, and Carl Lawson sacked Matt Ryan. That's a really big play because, you know, the Falcons ended up kicking a field goal on that drive. So they were up 5 points, whereas they had been really hot in the red zone before that point. If they had scored a touchdown, the game's over. The Bengals can't even catch up with that last minute touchdown drive. So, you know, you don't want to say Carl Lawson saved the game, but he really, you know, helped push them in a difficult moment towards having a shot at winning, which they ended up actually, you know, picking up in the long run.
Exactly, and that, I think that's what they think. If he still, if we limit his snaps, he'll still be fresh at the end of these games, and he can make these awesome plays. And I think Lawson is a great player. I love watching him. I knew last summer he was going to be a breakout player. So I understand why people want him on the field more. But you could also say Hubbard and Willis should probably be playing too. So it'll be interesting to see if they keep him where he is or if someday they try to play him 60 or 70 snaps. I don't think so, at least not right now, but who knows, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good luxury to have, is having too many good defensive linemen. A lot of teams would be happy to have that concern when it's a problem for the Bengals.
Right, although I think that this line has been hyped up so much. Whenever they don't have a great game, people will kind of wonder what happened. And I don't think they pressured Ryan that much. I mean, Lawson came up with the sack when they needed it. But overall, I don't know how much pressure the defensive line actually got on Ryan. So that's something that's going to have to change. And their linebackers need to play better too. But I think the return of Vontaze Burfict might help that out. So we'll see how much he plays this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, they did give up 36 points, so it wasn't like the defense played that great.
Not great. They're also last in teams converting third downs on them, so they got to fix that. And I don't think Burfict's going to be some magic wand that saves things, but I do think once he kind of gets up into playing shape, he's going to change that a little bit.
Is there someone you think who's going to, you know, who you think this person has to play better for them to really improve on defense? Because you might argue that, you know, just thinking about it from my perspective, the cornerbacks have not been especially great this year. Is there someone who you think, you know, either you would expect more from them or they would expect more from themselves over the next few games?
If the person that immediately came to mind is Drake Patrick. I think teams have picked on him a lot, especially against the Panthers. I mean, you could see that pretty much all day they were throwing at him. And maybe that's because they don't want to throw at William Jackson. But I think that's also the player fans would say needs to play better, especially when you're facing these high-powered offenses like you saw against the Falcons. I mean, they're going to pick one side or the other, and lately they've been picking on him. So he's one, but also, like I said, the linebackers. And perfect will help that, but also when Preston Brown gets fully healthy, I don't think his ankle had completely healed against the Falcons. He just looked kind of slow at times. He'd missed two games with an ankle injury, and I think that'll get better. But when you're playing with your with backup linebackers and a hobbled starter, those are the results you're going to expect to see, I would guess. Maybe not 36 points, but not all too surprising.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so you said before the year, in April, your prediction for this team was 8-8, correct?
Right, and then when I did my new predictions right for the season, I moved that to 9-7 and had them beating the Raiders instead of losing to them. Now that we've seen what the Raiders are really like, I think a lot of people, including me, thought the Raiders would be a little bit better than they are.
Absolutely. So now, after four games, given that they are 3-1, let's get you on the record here. What is your new prediction for the Bengals in 2018? Do you still have them at 9-7, or are you going a little higher?
It's tough because I actually did go look at the schedule again the other day, and they have a lot of hard games. After they play the Steelers, they have to go face the Chiefs on the road. So that's two hard games, and they have a hard stretch at the end of the season. Now, I think that this is a team that is capable of going 10-6, but I just think that there's a lot of hard games to get through. And they've already gotten through one hard stretch. Opening up with three games on the road in September is way harder than people seem to realize. But I could see them going 10-6. Now, another Bengals reporter said 10-6 at the beginning of the season, and I said, I don't know. I think you're just being optimistic. But, you know, now that we've seen how they play, I think it's possible. I just think this defense has to play better. And I think they will once Burpick comes back and they kind of get it together. But if they don't, you're going to see a lot more games like you saw last week.
I mean, they have two of their for the next 9 weeks, you will have two road trips. You'll have one to Kansas City and one to Baltimore. Two tough games, but 7 weeks where it's either the bye or it's a home game for the Bengals. So, I mean, that's a stretch where you could put together a lot of wins if things go right.
Right, and I think getting out of September 3-1 versus 2-2, that's going to make a big difference. But you just, I mean, looking at that schedule, all right, Steelers, then at Chiefs, then they play the Bucs, and you don't really know which Bucs team is going to show up, but they seem to be trending downward. Then you play the Saints, that's another very good offense, that's difficult. Play the Ravens. Browns are a little better, but they're still, I still would have the Bengals beating the Browns both times. And then they have the Broncos, the Chargers, the Steelers at the end of the season, so they're not going to get it easy at any point this season, but I think that they believe, like I said, they believe they're going to be really good, and I think they have that potential too. So.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen four games where, you know, like I said, 3-1, that's you've already banked those wins. Even if they're a 500 team the rest of the year, that's 9-7 right there. So that's already, you know, exceeding at least the April expectations and matching, you know, your expectations heading into September. And I think topping a lot of what people thought the Bengals were capable of before the season.
You know, I found it weird that so many people had the Bengals going 5-11 or winning four games. I just thought those were lazy predictions. I thought if you really looked at this team, they're capable of a lot more than that. I've been saying that all throughout the spring. I said, this is not a 5-win team. I think that they have a lot of talent on each part of that roster, and at the very least, they should have a winning record. I mean, that's why I kind of started at 8-8 and it went up. But, you know, I saw a lot of 5-11 predictions, and I didn't think it matched up with what I was seeing during training camp and during the preseason, honestly.
It's haters. The haters are out there. You should not be listening to them.
Hey, not haters, but although, you know, of course, if you pick against the team you cover, you're a hater. But just, I just think that they didn't really look at the team. I think they thought they were trending downward from last year, and I saw the opposite. I said they have a better left tackle. They have their center now. They've kind of fixed the offensive line a little bit. You know, Mixon's in a second year. The wide receivers are better. You have Carl Lawson. But, I mean, they have a lot of talent. They just have to realize their potential. I just think the Marvin Lewis factor probably is what had people saying they weren't going to have a very good year.
Yeah, even last year, end of last season, nothing to play for. They're 5-9. They go out and they beat the Lions at home, beat the Ravens, of course, in that famous game in Baltimore Week 17 against two teams who did have, I think, something to play for. So this is a team that, on their day, they're going to be very competitive with just about anybody in football. Well, Catherine Trell, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Where can people check out more of the stuff you're working on with the Bengals?
You can find my work at ESPN.com or look at my Twitter at @Cat_Carroll.
Very, very good Twitter. One of my favorite beat writer Twitters out there because it's always informative, but then also like there is a undercurrent of, how can I put this? Just it's very entertaining in terms of your interactions with fans and in like a human, like just you treat fans like human beings as opposed to some other beat writers.
I will warn you, if anyone who's listening follows me on Twitter, I do tweet a lot and I do tweet about LSU on Saturdays. So you have to put up with that, but it's mostly Bengals and it's almost always about football.
Are you excited for this Bengals Saints matchup?
I am excited, mostly because I'm so excited to have everyone come to Cincinnati. But I'm excited because the Bengals offense is so much better than it seemed like it was going to be, and the Saints offense is always fun to watch. So maybe we're going to get another high-scoring game, and it'll be fun. Who needs defense?
No one needs defense. Is the slogan for the 2018
NFL season. It's not as much fun.
Yes. Catherine, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much to our guest, Lindsay Theory, Catherine Terrell. We have more audio coming next week. Of course, we're going to recap week 5 on Monday back here on the Bill Barnwell Show.